The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great sports weekend. We have John Wilner, as we do every Monday. John and I will chop it up on the college football scene and the Olympics, because that is tied to college sports, not just football and basketball, that we do with John Wilner every Monday. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always and through the years. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. It was a weekend of Olympics. It was me saying if Caitlin Clark were on the floor, the women would have won by 20. It was me standing up and saying, oh my gosh, repeatedly with Steph Curry. It was me telling my wife when she said, well, the women won. I said, no, let's see the foot. Where's the foot? No, the announcer said they won. Let's see the foot in the women's game. France was tough. Like, we know the gap is closing between the countries and in the game of basketball. Forever, there's been the academies overseas, the way they go about it. If you're a 10-year-old, you're in a basketball academy, you are meant to be, or you're going to serve in your country's army. And we, on the other hand, we go to junior high, we go to high school, we go to college. Now there's prep schools, there's fake schools that are out there, there's the G League that's out there. We have to figure out some way so that we don't get caught by the rest of the world when it comes to basketball, and I would say it's coming. We have to make sure that we win and swim. Well, guess what? We don't win and swim as much. Yeah, we won a bunch of gold medals, but we didn't take the swim like we once did. Basketball was not a breeze like it used to be. Used to be play Serbia, what? Huh? You tell me, when you say Wembanyama and the gap isn't closing with him on the floor with a team for the next several years? You know, the men's team and seeing two Phoenix Suns out there, was that cool? I guess. Yeah, I live here. Yeah, they should have been out there. The people that said, well, Jason Tatum is getting screwed over, tell me exactly who Jason Tatum should have replaced. Tell me exactly who Jason Tatum would have been better than. Devin Booker, as we said on this show, the first game, was the guy that was doing all the dirt work, was the guy that was doing all the stuff that nobody was paying attention to. Instead, it was the high-flying dunks and the big shot from downtown and all that, which is fine. But I am one of those old school guys. I'm not going to apologize for it. When I see a guy like Devin Booker, who's, I'll use a hockey term, mucking and grinding and dirt working over in the corner on both ends of the floor, yeah, I'm glad Steve Kerr called him out at the end of it. Glad that he gave him the attention. You know, the people that said Steve Kerr didn't manage this team correctly. It's not that easy to manage all those egos. It's not that easy to go about it. I can't imagine that job. Because you're going to have some guys that are going to say, it's about me. And all of them are out there because they're 12 different corporations on 12 different islands. That's what they are. And they all come together and they put the USA on. Kevin Durant can come back and play in another one if he wants. If he wants to be in L.A., fine. Devin Booker wants to be in L.A., fine. LeBron James will say right now, no, I'm not going to play four more years. I don't know that. Does he deserve to be there just on merit? Like, for everybody who's a fan of Diana Taurasi, come on. Come on. Caitlin Clark should have been on that team. Caitlin Clark's on that team. It's not even a competition. Diana was hurt. It felt to me like, well, we're giving somebody who deserves to be there because of years of seniority. Well, that's not going to work anymore. It's just not going to work. You know, Kalia Copper played for gold and got it and was terrific. And Kelsey Plum is a ton of fun to watch. Loved watching the ladies play. And the whole Olympic movement in our country this time around felt right. Even down to NBC, other than the closing ceremonies, of course they pushed Jimmy Fallon on us. Opening ceremonies, of course they pushed Savannah and Hoda down our throats. Because in the NFL, that's what they're going to do when they have a mega event. I'm not going to watch. I was offended. Great. Knock yourself out. I don't know. There was maybe 40 million people that watched last night. I'm not going to watch. Fine. Turn the channel. But a vast majority of people across this country took in the Olympics and enjoyed it for what it was. John and I, John Wilner and I, are going to talk about the Olympic movement in the college space compared to football and basketball and what's going to happen moving forward. Because if you are in the NCAA and you're thinking we have to chop sports to make it work for football and basketball, how can you take the numbers from the Olympics and say, yeah, we're just going to get rid of all these? How do you do that? How do you tell corporate sponsors or say, you know what, we don't care about football or basketball. We actually do care about water polo. We actually do care about judo. We actually do care. We actually do want to see wrestling. We want to see dollars go into that. So, you know, it was great to watch, but there were definitely some holes in the basketball process. I'm more along the lines of what Steve Kerr did with Jason Tatum was right. He wasn't one of the best players. When he was out there, he didn't play great. Halliburton took it in, and he's going to grow from that. I thought he had a great sense of humor. He put his gold medal up, and the kid who was in study group and didn't really do much, and he gets a gold medal. I thought that was funny. Have a sense of humor about it. He'll get his time. You don't just throw guys in there and it all works out. Jason Tatum should never have taken any time away from the guys who are out on the floor in his position. Shouldn't have. You're not going to take Devin Booker off the floor. Can't convince me of that. And this is not about the Celtics and how great the Celtics are. I don't care. Watched all the Diamondback games. Watched very little preseason football. Watching preseason football is right down at the absolute bottom of the barrel when it comes to sporting events. It's right there with the Pro Bowl. Why anybody would take their time and watch stuff, I get it. You have to have your fix a little bit. Did I watch a little bit in here? Yeah, but by and large, it was over on the baseball game. The Diamondbacks are about as fun a team. This might be the most fun I've seen a Diamondback team have, ever. And I've been here for all of them. If you think back to did Matt Williams and Luis Gonzalez and Randy Johnson and Jay Bell, did they all see eye to eye? Did they all go about it, or were they more as a different era, different time, where they were very stoic in their approach, led by Matt? That's why Mark Grace was so beloved when he came here. He's kind of fun. Yeah, because the guys that were out on the field weren't the most fun-loving group of guys. Individually, they were great. And then Randy and Kurt were here, and Kurt was known as Red Light Kurt. If there was a camera on, it was Red Light, Kurt's going to be there. Randy was Randy. And the players that came in that had their Todd Stottlemyre had the red ass all the time. He did. You watch this team and this team, different time, different era, different group of kids. They're kids. They're just out there screwing around having fun. And there's a few vets that are doing their thing. But man, like the youthful enthusiasm and the joy of the game. You know, you can't tell me that when you watch, I don't even want to single one guy out. I'll single out Jake McCarthy. When you watch Jake McCarthy and the hair is flowing and I'm jealous of what he's got and what I don't have, and he's making plays both offensively and defensively. Defensively, they're really good in the outfield. How do you not like that? How do you not like the youthful joy and the enthusiasm of it? When Gurriel yesterday goes up against the wall, makes a catch, and you see in the bullpen that Justin Martinez and Mike Fetters are pumping their fists, how do you not like that? You know, when you see a walk-off the other night from a rookie catcher who bombs one into the right field pavilion, and they're out there just mobbing him, and it's this way every single night. They're down 2-0, doesn't matter. Down 3-0, doesn't matter. Now, I will say that Colorado's in town and they stink. They're going nowhere fast. So this is one of those series starting tonight with the Rockies that you look at and say, okay, it's Fott. Fott's pitched really well. Fott's been underrated this season. Fata has been there throughout all of this. He didn't miss time like Gallon did, Kelly did. Montgomery's trying to figure himself out. Brandon Fott's been really good, and so he's able to go tonight. We have ASU and U of A workouts. We have the Cardinals going to Indianapolis. The only thing interesting to that for joint workouts is Marvin Harrison Jr. going back home where his dad was a stud and a Hall of Famer. And that's interesting to me. Up next, it is John Wilner, the great John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things college football, college sports. That's next. I'm going to get over to the college football, but because the Olympics is fresh, it just wrapped up. I know you've got some thoughts on what it means to have the Olympic sports be so relevant in this new era that we're in, where we hear athletic directors say the priority is football and men's basketball to fill the seats. But does that change at all, John, given the numbers, the buzz, the everything?
Yeah, that was some Olympics, wasn't it? I mean, it's like the thing, the whole event returned after 12-year absence in some ways. Look, what I was considering when I see the TV ratings, all the interest is how important the Olympic movement is to our country and how critical college sports are to the Olympic pipeline, right? I mean, a lot of these athletes came up through U.S. college sports, and the legal issues and economic challenges that college sports are facing is particularly this, the lawsuit that we have talked about, the House lawsuit that is going to create revenue sharing. All of it has called into question the future of Olympic sports because they don't make money for the colleges, right? Mm-hmm. Each university has two programs that make money, football and men's basketball, and the rest aren't profitable. So you have two sports supporting anywhere from 12 to 20 to 25 other sports that aren't making money. And so with this economic squeeze coming because of the lawsuit, there is some concern about the future of Olympic sports and whether they're going to get cut. So the NCAA is asking Congress to try to get involved to basically codify rules for college sports that would protect the Olympic sports. And that Olympic sports, the Olympic sports are critical to the Olympic movement. So I was thinking, boy, this is good news for the people in college sports trying to get Congress to codify laws that would protect Olympic sports.
Okay, but what would that look like? Because, hey, we need to protect women's water polo because they're really good in the Olympics. Or we need to protect volleyball. We need to protect beach volleyball. Yeah, that all sounds great, but those could just be club sports. I'll take the devil's advocate approach with you.
Right. Well, the big thing is antitrust protection to stop the law, which Congress can grant. You know, it would basically get all the NIL rules would be the same across the states, and it would protect the NCAA from this barrage of lawsuits that are coming. Right. We just got the House lawsuit settled. Mm-hmm. You know, billions of dollars in damages, hundreds of millions a year in revenue sharing. But there's a whole nother lawsuit in Colorado filed by a former Colorado running back, Alex Vontenot, that is still ongoing. And now, you know, there's a whole bunch of Title IX issues. So the NCAA has got to, it needs a shield, essentially, from all these lawsuits. And that's what Congress could do. Anything that is good for the Olympic movement in this country is good for increases the chances of Congress getting involved. And certainly the Paris Olympics were enormous.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with what you're saying. And when you're talking about the NCAA, what do you think it was like in the NCAA offices last? I think it was last Friday the story came out that Jim Harbaugh is going to be the honorary captain for Michigan's home opener against Fresno.
I know. It's great. In some ways, you got to laugh and you think, good for them sticking their thumb at the NCAA. But then you think, you know, Reggie Bush wasn't even allowed around USC for more than a decade, right? They couldn't have any real interaction with him. And here we go, Harbaugh, going to be at the, you know, honorary captain. It's a whole new world out there. And what the new world does is make the old world look like the Stone Age in terms of how this whole thing was adjudicated by the NCAA over the course of decades.
Because it makes sense that you're going to welcome the national champs. Okay, I understand that. But because of what is happening to the current head coach at Michigan, they have the former head coach who's done all these things that the NCAA can do nothing to Jim Harbaugh.
And right.
It kind of puts the current head coach right in their crosshairs because he's been a part of this in some way, shape, or form.
Yes, absolutely. Sharon Moore is under, he's going to be under a lot of scrutiny from the NCAA for his roles in multiple scandals, right? We'll see if what the penalties are. Probably won't know till after the season. But yeah, absolutely. He's the whole Harbaugh thing has put even more pressure on him. I'm curious to see if the NFL takes any action against Harbaugh, right? There is a precedent.
Why would they?
Is a precedent, though. If you remember, Jim Tressel at Ohio State was fired, NCAA violations, and you know, Terrell Pryor, and the NFL came, you know, penalized those guys. So even though that was a long time ago and we don't think that anything's going to happen to Harbaugh, it's kind of something that worth monitoring. I don't know what they do. I'm sure that, you know, the Chargers would obviously throw a fit, but because of what happened to Ohio State a long time ago, there's some talk about it. And also because it's Michigan and Ohio State, right? That's sure. A big part of the whole narrative.
Sure, sure. Deion Sanders getting confrontational with reporters.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen this happen much in college football?
I have seen it happen over the, you know, coaches have issues with reporters here and there. That it happens across the country several times every season, really. This is interesting because it was the preseason, because Sanders has received so much fawning coverage from the Denver media. And also because, I mean, there were two instances at this press conference. One of the instances, you know, was a local CBS Denver reporter. And Deion's like, I got nothing against you, but I'm not going to talk to you or answer your question because of something that CBS National wrote and reported. So that, you know, I thought that was kind of a, you know, taking the low road there by Deion. The issue with the other reporter about what's been written in the past, you know, I'm sure that Deion would, you know, it would have been much better if he had just called that reporter aside and had a heart-to-heart conversation rather than making a big deal about it in the press conference. I view everything with Deion as how is it reflecting on Colorado, right? He is the institution's most visible public face by a factor of 100. So does it reflect well on Colorado that he's doing this and being confrontational? It doesn't really. And it reflects poorly on him because he's 4-8, right? Now, you got the talent tolerance issue, right? If they win this year, he can probably continue being a little bit of a jerk and there's not going to be a problem institutionally. But if they're 4-8 again or 5-7 again and these shenanigans continue, then it takes on, you know, there's a different dynamic and he's going to, you know, something's going to have to happen. But it doesn't reflect well. The stuff that Shadur and Shiloh do, none of it reflects well on Colorado, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, North Dakota State, Nebraska, Colorado State at Fort Collins.
Yeah.
Three games.
And nobody's going to be overlooking them this year because of all the hype, right? Because of what they did. You know, Nebraska's going to be better than they were last year for sure. North Dakota State's always a quality team. And Colorado State played them to overtime last year. So it's going to be hard. And the Big 12 schedule's hard. They could easily finish 4-8 or 5-7 again. I think their offensive line's going to be better, which will help. So Sanders won't get sacked 10 times a game, but there is certainly no guarantee that they're going to get to a bowl game. And if they don't, all these shenanigans are going to look much worse. And the university is going to end up having to step in and try to kind of rein him in a little bit.
You mentioned bowl games. John Woolner with us for a couple of minutes. Have the bowl games, I believe that they've lost some luster in the last few years. Now that it is the playoff being expanded to 12, if you don't make it within the 12, Is it a failed season to go to a bowl game? Is it just a participation trophy? I've always been one of those that thinks it's a great experience for a college kid to go anywhere, because a lot of those kids have never had that opportunity. But John, are we in a different time now, because the big cigar booster is saying, I did not give NIL money to go to the Sun Bowl. I have to have a program that is within the top 12 or it's a failed season.
Well, I'd say let's talk about that from the perspective of your two in-state programs, okay? Arizona ends up in the Sun Bowl after going to the Alamo and beating Oklahoma and entering the Big 12. They're going to be ranked preseason AP poll. They're top four team in the Big 12. They got a chance to win the conference. If they end up in the Sun Bowl, there's going to be some people that think it's a little bit of a failed season. There's no doubt. But what about if ASU makes the Sun Bowl, right? Kenny Dillingham picking this program up in his second year from the ashes, complete overhaul. They're picked, what were they picked in the Big 12? 14th, 15th, 16th.
Last.
Nobody's expecting anything.
At last.
If they somehow climb into the Sun Bowl or the LA Bowl even, or the Independence Bowl, it's a successful season. So I think it will depend entirely on what the preseason expectations are. And those expectations are a little bit different because of the reconfigured conferences. Winning your conference now doesn't, you know, mean something different than it did before because of the way everything is structured. But I still think that for some programs, getting to a bowl game, any bowl game, is going to be a huge victory.
But I'll just throw Jed Fish at you, okay? Washington this year, if they go to just any bowl game and they're not in the 12-team playoff, failed season, right? The expectation in UW is we should be here every year. If you go to Alabama, you have to make it every year. If you go to Georgia, you have to make it every year. Sark doesn't make it this year in the 12-team, he'll be on the hot seat. Ryan Day, if he doesn't beat Michigan or make it in the postseason, he's going to quit. He's going to get shown the door. There's programs that you could just go down the list and say, okay, here's our 12-team playoff. There's like 10 teams that should be there every year.
Yes.
And they're not. If LSU doesn't go, failed season, right?
Yes, absolutely. For those blue bloods, it is. The bar is raised for the coaches at the blue bloods because there's 11 spots, right? One spot of the 12 is reserved for the group of five. And then you've got four conference champs, seven at large. Mm-hmm. Probably three or four teams in the Big Ten, three or four teams in the SEC. If you're coaching a blue blood in one of those leagues, LSU, Ohio State, and you don't make it, failed season, you might get fired. Washington's an interesting case because they did make the playoff last year, but they have one returning starter. So, and they were picked, I want to say they were picked 10th or 11th in the Big Ten preseason media poll. So the expectations in Seattle, despite what happened last year, are pretty low. I don't think Fish is at a, you know, you got to make the playoff or it's a bad season at all. I think if they can get to a top-tier Pac-12 bowl game, it'll be viewed successfully. And we should interrupt our discussion to remind fans that the Pac-12 schools, all 12 of them, the 10 that have left and the two that are remaining, are in the same bowl games that they always have been. Mm-hmm. Unless you make the playoff, you are going to the Alamo or the Holiday or the Las Vegas or the Sun or the LA or the Independence Bowl. They are not participating in the bowl games that are contracted with their new conferences. It's either the playoff or a Pac-12 bowl. And that's the case for the next two seasons. It was going to be too disruptive for all the conferences to reconfigure their bowl arrangements to accommodate the new schools. So they are just sticking with the old school. So Arizona, you know, they won the Alamo last year. Alamo, Holiday, Sun, Las Vegas.
Independence.
LA, Independence, right? All those.
Yeah. I see your point on the bowl games, but I just think it's a case by case. Oregon doesn't make it into the playoff. It's a fail.
Case by case. Oh, for Oregon to make. Yes, absolutely. They are a national title favorite. It is definitely case by case. The other thing that's going to be interesting is the bowl games. So the non-playoff bowl games certainly are losing some significance because now there are, you know, there's 12 teams in the playoff instead of four. So the other bowl games lose significance. the number of opt-outs from those games could be pretty high, even higher than it's been, because players are going to say, you know what, this game matters even less. The Alamo Bowl matters less than it did. You know, the Music City Bowl matters less. The Belk Bowl, they didn't mean a whole lot before. They mean even less now. Why am I going to even bother? So the NIL component, the bowl's ability to offer players financial rewards, will play a role probably in keeping those players engaged in the game, playing in the games. But I think you're going to see more opt-outs for the non-playoff bowls.
But I think, John, we'll take it a step further, and then I'll let you go. It's with the portal opening now, if I don't go to a bowl game, yeah, the Belk Bowl could say, I'll pay you $500,000 to come here and play in this game, right? You run the risk of injury. You probably need to get onto your next university. They probably already know you need to get onto your next university. And so I wonder, I'm all about getting the bowls compressed. There's too many of them. And I'm okay with players opting out. I saw Jalen Smith lay on the ground at Notre Dame with his leg shattered. Okay. I get that. I totally get when I think that's was a tipping point for bowls. Here we have two bowl games. One of them, in my opinion, should be played in Tempe, not at a baseball stadium. Shouldn't be played at 8 o'clock on a Christmas Eve or Christmas day after. Should be played in prime time. And I'd be okay if that bowl game went away. I'd like to see it stay, but you know, here in the Valley, do we really need to? I guess I'm wondering, do you see contraction of bowls coming down? Because I don't think that train is going to stop. Of players not playing, and I just don't see where the Bulls can say to the left guard, hey, play in this game and we'll give you $800,000, even though you're going to be a first round pick.
Very true. We'll know in a year or two. The current contract cycle for all of these Bulls is aligned with the current college football playoff contract. The 24 and 25 seasons are the last of the current deals. Starting in 2026, we don't know the format for the playoff. And we also, none of the conferences are affiliated with the bowls. So the Pac-12 deals, for instance, went from 2020 to 20 through 2025. So we will know very soon what the next iteration of the bowl system will be. But I'll tell you what, ESPN gets better ratings for these bowls than they do for billiards or whatever else they're going to put on Tuesday, December 27th at 8 o'clock Eastern. That's the thing. ESPN owns a lot of them. They broadcast almost all of them and they draw better ratings than the alternative. That is why there are so many bowls, because there is a market. I agree. I mean, some of them are ridiculous, but I think that there is a better chance. And I can't remember, to be honest, how many there are. I think they're 40 this year, might be 41. I think there's a better chance we'll get to 45 bowls before we get to 30 bowls, because ESPN sees the viewership and there's nothing else for them.
Sure. What happens to the Rose Bowl? The Rose Bowl is sitting over here and we're talking about bowl games, and the Rose Bowl is, we are not moving. This is who we are. This is what we do. We are New Year's afternoon, part of tradition, part of history, part of heritage. What happens to the Rose Bowl from your view?
Yeah, the Rose Bowl, that January 1st, 5 p.m. Eastern, they are holding their ground. It's like the Russians at Stalingrad. They are not going to back down from that no matter what happens. And the TV ratings support that. They do monster ratings, right? So here's the situation with the Rose Bowl, right? The current contract, they are part of the 12-team playoff that is supposed to rotate. So there's six games, two out of every 3 years, you're a quarterfinal, one out of every 3 years, you're a semifinal. Those semifinals are played somewhere around January 8th or 9th. The Rose Bowl probably in the next contract cycle, starting in the 2026 season, there's been reports that the Rose Bowl is just going to say, you know what, we want to be a quarterfinal. We don't ever want to be a semifinal. We want to be a quarterfinal because that is January 1st. At 5 p.m. Eastern. And we care more about that window than we care about being a semifinal host on a Thursday, the 8th or 9th of January. So I think that's what's going to end up happening with Rose Bowl. They're just going to be a permanent quarterfinal game on January 1st, but they won't. There's no more affiliation with any particular conference, right? There's no more Pac-12, Big Ten, not affiliated. They will just take the game that the selection committee gives them. But I think they'll be a permanent quarterfinal host. That's the best option for them to keep that time slot.
Okay, no champion game for them then?
No, the champion game will stay as separate from the bowls with the Rose, Fiesta, Orange, Peach, Sugar. What am I missing? Rose. Those six will remain quarterfinal, semifinal. You have four quarterfinal games, two semifinal games for those six bowls. Championship game is bid out separately, and that will continue. So I don't even remember where it is this year, but they rotate, you know, among traditional warm weather sites, indoor stadiums, that kind of thing. That will be a separate from the bowl games that host the quarterfinal and semifinals.
Yeah.
Confusing. Yeah. And again, there's no format. There's a contract with ESPN starting with the 2026 season for $1.3 billion a year. We don't know how many teams are even going to be involved. We don't know what the format's going to be. They have to figure that out. They're waiting. They want to see how the 12-team playoff works this year before they settle on a format for 26 and beyond.
Not confusing. You did a good job.
No, it's tough.
Throwing darts.
I have sometimes I got to look stuff up, and it's my job to know all this stuff by heart. So.
You did great. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.